Okay, let's open with a word of prayer and we'll begin. Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for all that you've given to us. We thank you for your word and your instructions on how to live before you in this challenging world that we face today. We ask that you would keep us separate and keep us pure in our thinking and our lifestyle that would please you. We ask this in Yeshua's name. Amen. In this, we see a test of what was in the people's hearts. If you notice that through the exchange between Moses and the people, one point it involved that the people wanting to kill Caleb and Joshua. Interesting to me was up to this point, Yahweh really had no interaction with what was going on. The people made their own decision as to what they were going to do, what they were going to see, how they were going to investigate the land, because at the beginning of all this, in the word that they chose to search out or scout out, they also, the translators put in there the word spy out. So Yahweh says for them to search the land to see what was in it, to show them what he was saying was absolutely true, that it was a land flowing with milk and honey. When Yahweh presents something to us, we can either take it at point at face value as to what he says is absolutely true, or he will allow us to go in to look at the land to see if we like it or not. Evidently, he allowed them to see it, and they came back, 10 of them, with an evil report. And it was so much that the people couldn't tolerate it. They were weeping all that night in front of Moses and Aaron and grumbling and complaining against them that whole night through. And then Joshua and Caleb got up and ripped their garments, and it said, please, just do what he says to do. Let's go in and take the land, because he is with us, and the people that were in the land, their safety and their warrior type was taken away from them. They were fearful from the time that they left Egypt until this very moment when they went into the land. Yahweh said nothing until the point where they were ready to pick up stones and kill Caleb and Joshua. Then he stepped in. He was going to wipe them all out. He was going to have Moses, through his two sons, make a mightier nation than they were. And Moses, in his humbleness, intervened for them. If it wasn't for Moses and Aaron's intervention, Yahweh would have started all over with the descendants of Moses to make a mightier nation. The people tested Yahweh 10 times from the time they left Egypt until that very moment when he said, enough is enough. They said, would it be better for us to go back to Egypt or die in Egypt? Or would it have been better for us to die in the land where we're at today? And Yahweh took them up on their word. He said, just as much as you said so, I will do. I would be very careful about what we say before Yahweh and what oaths we make before him, because he's listening to what we're saying. He's intently listening, whether it be for good or for bad, whether it be for blessing or for cursing. He's listening to what we're saying. He says, Yeshua says later on, way after this point, he says, let your yes be yes and your no be no, for anything else is sin. When we say we swear by heaven and earth, that is not ours to swear by. Our hair is not even for us to swear by. Our ancestors are not for us to swear by. Only this. Let our vows be yes and no. If we don't want to do something, say so. Don't say you're going to do something and not do it. The test revealed what was in the people's heart. It's apparent to me that they not only did not want to leave Egypt, they did not want to go into the land. They just wanted out of Pharaoh's reach. They were just wanting to go out in the wilderness and have a cookout and a barbecue with hang out with God for a while and then go back, evidently, because they always wanted to turn back to go to Egypt. It is beyond me to think about people who were in servitude to Pharaoh under harsh bondage condition. They were crying out to God and they were set free, and they crossed over the Red Sea on dry ground, and they went into the wilderness, and they went to Mount Sinai and saw the miracles after miracles, the manna, the water coming out from a rock. And we later find out that was Yeshua. That they still did not trust God. They cried out for meat and they got meat, and those who were lusting after it died with the meat still in their mouth. So it's apparent that they did not want to leave Egypt, nor did they want to go into the promised land. Rather, they took the attitude they wanted to kill Joshua and Caleb, to get rid of those who were testifying on behalf of Yahweh. Isn't that the enemy's tactics always? If they can't win one way, they're going to try to kill those who are testifying on God's behalf. They saw the giants and they seized the opportunity to convince the people not to listen to the other two witnesses, so much that the people wanted to silence their testimony. The enemy always wants to silence our testimony for Yeshua. They said, this is not the right way to go. Don't listen to those people. They're just lunatics. They're out there in the wilderness. They don't know what's going on. We had it better over in Egypt. And how many times have I heard since I've been over here in Jordan, oh, it was so much better in the States. We could have medical and dental. We could have our cars and our jobs and all these things. And yet when God called them, they turned a deaf ear to it and they left and went back home. This is not the only time the rebel rousers got the people, wanted the people to return to Egypt. This is a crazy speech. Who in their right mind were slaves is set free to trade their freedom and return to become slaves again? Caleb said the giants were bred for them. This is what Yahweh is saying to them, that none of that generation would enter the land. They all died from the time at the age of 20 and upwards. They all of them perished in the wilderness. From the time they left Egypt until the 40 years had expired, that the last one died. And that generation, their children are the ones that entered in. The only two that made it to go into the land were Caleb and Joshua. Not very good odds when you consider all the things that happened from the time of creation till this very day, and how many of God's people made it through to the other side. You think about Noah and his generation. Only 8 out of 7 to 10 billion people on the planet made it to the other side of the flood. That's not very good odds. He said that a remnant will make it through the end. And a remnant is just a small part of the whole, is what's left over. After all that has been dealt with throughout generation after generation, only a very few is going to make it in. Yeshua said that wide is the gate and wide is the way that leads to destruction, but narrow is the way, the path, and narrow is the gate. Few will find it and enter into the gate. They'll see the gate and some of them will turn back, say the way is too difficult, the gate's too small, or something is wrong with this picture. They're going to turn back as if that God didn't want them to go into the gate. He says, I am the way, the truth, and life. No man comes to the Father but by me. For every day they were in the land, they would spend a year in the wilderness, and all that generation died. In Matthew 20, verses 1 through 16, it says, for the kingdom of heaven is like a man, a housemaster, who went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a denarius a day, for the day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said to them, you also go into my vineyard, and whatever is right, I will give you. And they went, and he went out about the sixth hour, and he did likewise. And about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing idle. He said, why are you standing here all day idle? He said to them, because no one has hired us. He said to them, you also go into my vineyard, and you shall receive whatever is right. So when the evening had come, the Lord of the vineyard said to the steward, call the laborers and pay them their wages from beginning from the last to the first. And when those who were hired about the 11th hour came, and each one received a denarius. But when the first one came, they supposed they would receive more. They also, each one of them received a denarius. And they receiving it, they murmured against the master of the house, saying, these last ones worked only an hour, and you made them equal with us who have borne the burden of the heat of the day. And he answered one of them and said, friend, I do no wrong. Did you not agree with me for denarius? Take yours and go. I will give to this last one the same as you. Is it not lawful for me to do with what I want with my own? Is your eyes evil because I'm good? So that the last one be first and the first last. Of the many are called, but few are chosen. Again, we go back to what the Torah portion is about. They were called. All of them were called to come in out of Egypt, to go into the land that God prepared for, not because of them, but because of the promise he made to Abraham and Isaac and to Jacob, that he would give their descendants the land. And how many people actually entered the land? Of that generation, only 2. Even Moses and Aaron didn't get to enter the land. And again, in Matthew 22, 2 through 14, it says, the kingdom of heaven was like a certain king who made a marriage for his son. He sent out all his servants and called those who were invited to the wedding, and they would not come. Again, he sent out other servants, saying, tell those who were invited, behold, I prepared my dinner, my oxen and fatlings are killed, and all the things are ready. Come to the marriage. But not caring, they went their ways. One to his field, another to his trading, and the rest took his servants and treated them spitefully and killed them. And when the king heard it, he was angry and sent out his armies, destroyed those murderers and burned up their cities. He said to his servants, the wedding is ready, but they who are invited are not worthy. Therefore, go into the exits and of the highways, and as many as you shall find, invite them to the marriage. And so the servants went out to the highways and gathered together as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was filled with reclining guests. And the king, coming to look over the guests, he saw a man who did not have on a wedding garment. He said to him, friend, how did you come in here without having a wedding garment? And he was speechless. And the king said to his servants, bind him hand and foot, take him away, and cast him into outer darkness, and it shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen. And again, that goes right back to what we're talking about today. They were all called, but few chose to go in. And those who then later on that chose to come in, they in their hearts said, well, we'll go going to listen to what God has to say now. We're ready to go into the land, but God already said it's too late. And it's just like it was in the days of Noah. When they finally realized the flood was coming and it was on them at that moment, they chose now to listen to God. And God says, sorry, you missed the boat, quite literally. They were not allowed to go in because their hearts were far from God. They chose to go a different path than what God had put in their heart. It said to them that when the ark was being built and they were being warned year after year, Methuselah and Noah warned them for 120 years, and then the ark was built. And when the flood came after Methuselah's death, they were still wanting to go sin, and they were doing that until the very last moment, until it was so late that they were trying to do their sin and they couldn't, and they were banging on the doors trying to get in. They were trying to break the door down, and Yahweh sent the animals to fend them off, and they sent them all home. What does that say to us? Do what he says to do when he says to do it. Don't tarry. Don't wait. Do what he says. Prepare now, for the kingdom of heaven is near, even at the door. In Matthew 7, 12 through 14, therefore all these things, whatever you desire that men should do to you, do so to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Go in through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And many there who will go in through it, because narrow is the gate and constricted is the way which leads to life, and few will find it. From all this, we see that there is a test. And just because you are with the right people does not mean that you'll be saved. The odds are not good that many will be saved. Rather, the ones who are doing the Father's business, in the case of Noah, only the seven others, including him, well, and himself, were saved. So out of 7 to 10 billion people, only 8 were saved of the flood. Out of Sodom and Gomorrah, only 3 people were saved. Lot's wife was one of those who were saved, but she turned around and looked, and she was turned into a pillar of salt. So how many make up a remnant would be saved? We must live a life that glorifies Yahweh. Something else that caught my eye during this whole study that I was doing here on the Torah portion was that often the interpreters interpret the word for search out or spy out the land. I would have thought that there would be different words, and I found it was the same word that was translated search out is the same word it was translated spy out. And that word is called, in the English translation, it would be tour, or to one that would search out diligently to see as a tourist. When we go to Israel or even in Jordan, we go look at the sites. We're looking at all the wonderful things, all the gates and the ins and the outs, just looking at the shops and seeing what there is for sale. That's a tourist. You know, if you had a camera, you could take pictures of the different mountain sides and stuff like that. But what they had done was they did not just a survey, but they did a reconnaissance mission to go out and seek out all the strongholds, all the walled cities, all the inhabitants of the land to see if there are mighty warriors in the land. And that's what they found. Oh yeah, they found grapes and wonderful vegetation there, and trees and rivers and fish and all these things in there. They found that, but they minimized the things of God that he gave to them and maximized on what the enemy had placed in the land. How many times do we do that even today in our everyday life? We maximize what the enemy is doing rather than give God glory for all the things that he's done for us. Looking at the things of man rather than the things of God. In Numbers 13:2, it says, send men out so they may search out the land of Canaan, which I give to the sons of Israel, and you shall send a man from every tribe and fathers, every one a ruler among them. And in verses 16 and 17, these were the names of the men that Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Joshua the son of Nun, Joshua. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and say to them, go up this way southward and go up into the mountain. And they switched back to the word, the translation search out. In verse 21, it says, so they went up and searched out the land of the wilderness of Zin to Rehob and the men of Hathman. And the sons of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, for the whole congregation said to them, oh, that we would die in the land of Egypt, or that we would die in the wilderness. They went in, they were supposed to search out the land to verify what God said was true. Even though we don't need to verify anything that God says is true, he allowed them to do that because they were curious to see what was really there. But in their hearts, they were hard. They were not following after God's heart. They were following after their own. And when they saw the giants, their hearts melted in fear because of them. And he convinced the people not to go up. And that whole generation passed away because they said that their giants would come and eat them up and take take them out. And according to the numbers, Numbers 14:34, it says, according to the number of the days that you search out the land for 40 days, each day for a year, you shall bear your iniquities 40 years, and you shall know my alienation. They were wanderers now. They were in exile. The ones that were slaves that were set free are now waiting for their own deaths. It's like a man on death row. Something else that came to mind as I read through this, I saw Judah and Ephraim. And it's the first time I saw that, to where we talked about this many times, where Judah and Ephraim is represented in Ezekiel as two sticks. Two sticks are brought back together as one. In this case here, in Numbers, they're one nation. Later on, to be divided up after King Solomon's death with Rehoboam and Jeroboam, that God would split the nation in two because of the hard heartedness of the people, that he wanted them to see how he saw them, how he viewed them. There were two nations in one, and they were acted as two nations in one because of their idolatry and their sinfulness. Judah was a little bit less likely, but Israel, the 10 tribes of the north, were more bound up in idolatry at this point. Something else came to mind. This will all mention in the kingdom of Israel would be divided. Judah would be the leader of the southern kingdom. Ephraim would be represented the northern kingdom. In Numbers 13:6, the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Juniper. In Numbers 13:8, the tribe of Ephraim, Joshua, or Hosea, the son of Nun. 1 Kings 11:26-39. And Jeroboam, son of Nebat, an Ephraimite of Zadar, Solomon's servant, whose mother's name was Zerkah, a widow, he too lifted up his hand against the king. And he was the cause, he lifted up his hand against the king. Solomon built Milo, repaired the breaks of the city, and David's father. And the man Jeroboam was a mighty man of war. And Solomon, seeing the younger man was doing work, he made him ruler and charge of the house of Joseph. And it happened at that time that Jeroboam went out to Jerusalem. The prophet Ahijah from Shiloh found him at the way, and he had clothed himself with a new garment, and the two of them were alone in the field. And Ahijah caught him hold of the new robe on him and tore it into 12 pieces. He said to Jeroboam, take 10 pieces for yourself, for so says Yahweh of the Elohim of Israel, behold, I will tear the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and will give 10 tribes to you. And he shall have one tribe for my servant David's sake, for Jerusalem's sake, the city which I chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, because they have forsaken me and have worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of Sidons, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Milcom, the goddess of the sons of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways to do what is right in my eyes, to keep my statutes and my judgment as David his father did. But I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him ruler in all the days of life for the sake of David, my servant, whom I chose because he kept my commandments and statutes. He had to keep Judah still in that role, because that's the line that came Yeshua out of David. And it wasn't through Solomon. It was through Nathan, his son. So he took the kingdom at that time away from Solomon's sons, Rehoboam, and he gave part of it to Jeroboam, and they divided the land. From that point on, it was the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, and you see in the writings there that there's prophets that were in both sections at that time. So here later on, it's Yeshua is born and resurrected. He was born, he lived, and he died, and was resurrected. The kingdom was restored at that point. So I lost my place. In Ezra 37:15-28, and the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, the son of man, take a stick and write on it for Judah and for his companions and the sons of Israel, and take another stick and write on it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim and the house of Israel and his companions, and join them into one hand, into one stick, and it shall become one in your hand. And when the sons of your people shall speak to you, saying, what will you declare to us the meaning to you? And say to them, so says Yahweh, behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the stick of the tribes of Israel, his companions, and I'll put them with him, and the stick of Judah, and make one stick, and they shall be one in my hand. And the sticks on which you write shall be in the hands before their eyes, and shall say to them, so says Yahweh, behold, I will take the sons of Israel from among the nations where they have gone, and will gather on every side, and bring them into their own land, and will make them one one nation in the land on the mountains of Israel. One king will be the king over to them all, and they shall not be two nations, nor shall they be divided to two kingdoms anymore at all. Nor shall they be defiled by their idols, with their filthy idols, nor shall they transgression, but I will save them out of all their dwelling places. In them where they have sinned, I will cleanse them, and they shall be to me for a people, and I will be to them for God. And David my servant shall be king over them, and they shall be one shepherd to all of them, and they shall walk in my judgments and obey my laws and do them. And they shall dwell in the land that I have given to Jacob my servant, in the land of which your fathers have lived. And they shall dwell in it, and their sons, and their sons of their sons forever. And my servant David shall be their ruler forever. And I will cut a covenant of peace with them, and shall be an everlasting covenant with them. And I will place them and multiply them, and I will set my sanctuary in their midst forever. And my tabernacle will be with them. Yea, I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And the nations will know that I, Jehovah, sanctify Israel, when my sanctuary shall be in their midst forever. Continuing on the Hathor portion, Joshua ordered two spies into Jericho to report the condition of the city, contrasting the 10 leaders who gave an evil report. The spies gave a good report, as Yahweh, his fear of him, it was on the people of Jericho. In all this, let us guard what we say, for Yahweh is listening to what we are saying. The request that we make, unaware of his presence, he may grant to us as asked. If we speak evil towards his plan, be ready for the consequences that follow. And that's all I have.
Amen.